Take two. Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee karup, guten tag, jiao, weevee, va, cat, bang, half a day, jai, chinendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace, how, go vegan. From the left coast of the genetically mutated McNugget pharmaceutical vivisection prison killitary industrial corporation in the cheese-covered post-constitutional bankster bankrupt corruptocracy mocracy criminocracy unchallenged by meteocracy foodborne in the NSA NRA USA home of Uncle Sam Manella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. It's like take two. If you were listening live, we started the show, and then there were some unknown frequencies in the way, put there by Russian hackers, put there by the director of the FBI, Vladimir Putin. So I think we've cleaned it up. Remember, any technical problems that you ever hear on this program are the fault of Russia. So don't you forget it. I mean, Russia or Comey or Jill Stein or Bernie Sanders, but mainly Russia. So, in fact, any mistakes that I ever make on this show are due to Russian intervention. Okay, so there you have it. We try to be on live Mondays, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific time, but Russia. But I wasn't fretting. He gave me a little more time, you know, before the show. I should be preparing. I should be looking at the content of the program. You think people actually listen. I should be thinking about what I might want to say. But no, I was running around all day today. I had to get therapy for injuries sustained in a car accident. And so, I mean, I just got home and there was just time to boil a potato and a carrot, basically. And I saw, oh no, the veggies jar is empty. So, being the creative chef that I am, I stuffed the potato and the carrot in the veggies jar, you know, and smushed it up. So, you know, getting as much veggies into the recipe as possible, just a little bit of sea salt and cayenne pepper. And was that ever a hot, tasty treat, you know, come right before coming on air. So, you gotta love the potato, right? Right? People of Ireland, you gotta love the potato. You gotta love, so many people say, you know, so you hear from so many men, you know, I'm a meat and potatoes kind of guy. And it's like, all right, well, you got 50% of it right so far. And perhaps I should have a cookbook, you know, of recipes done in jars. I guess I could bake a yam, what, at about 350 or 400 for about 45 minutes, and then shove that in the veggies jar. So, and by the way, I did mention on my socialist networks this week that I found the envelope that had a bunch of coupons for veggies in it. So, you know, we need to creatively finance this radio program. So what we've done is we've set it up so that if you would be kind enough to donate $50 between now and the end of the year as your year-end tax-deductible donation, we will send you a coupon for a free jar of veggies. So that will be our thank you to you for a $50 contribution to Go Vegan Radio. You can find the donate button at goveganradio.com. We certainly appreciate your help in doing this. So anyway, where are we? All right, it's now safe to move about the planet now that all the Christmas music has ceased. Whew, thankfully. And now we can start paying attention to the real music. Again, let's have those donations come, because we want to create Radio Bobby. It would be nice to do that next month. You know, next month we celebrate Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden turning sweet 16. 16 years on the air, sweet 16, but unsweetened with refined sugar, which is filtered through cow bones, nor is it sweetened with high fructose corn syrup, which would be GMO also, right? So sweet 16 next month, 16 years into this program, it would be great to launch Radio Bobby, which I guarantee will be your music experience of a lifetime. You may not know this about me, but in a past life, I was a program director at Music Radio Station. Okay, looks like we had to deal with a little technical problem again there for a moment. Anyway, what I was saying is how I'm really optimistic about the new year already. As I said, the days are getting longer. It's going to be a good year for veganism. I see that people already are talking about resistance. I'm just looking. I have a tab open on the computer right now, and there on the side, it's join the resistance. So that seems to be the buzzword. It seems to be the action. People are interested in resistance. Well, there is no greater resistance than going vegan. That is resistance against Wall Street. You want to resist Wall Street? Go vegan. Resistance against the war machine. Resistance against fake media and fake news. Huh? Go vegan. Don't you think it's some nerve? That the media. It's amazing, isn't it? That the fact that Brian Williams has a job anywhere is quite amazing, and they are the ones who are lamenting fake news. Here, the king of fake news, Brian Williams, shouldn't be allowed to make in-store announcements at Walmart, although Hillary could probably get him that job there, too, after she spent 6 years on the board of that very pro-woman corporation, isn't it, Walmart? Families making that livable wage there? Anyway, and this legislation being pushed by fake Congress people, which doesn't really, Congress does not represent the will of the people. The people are not represented. This legislation against fake news is actually legislation against free speech, because everything is the opposite now of what it seems, right? We're noticing upside down, inside out. War is peace. Animals are food. Energy is nuclear. So, and by the way, check out the archives. Was it the show a couple of weeks ago? It is mandatory listening. You have to listen to Dr. Helen Caldicott, the world's foremost opponent of nuclear energy and power and war. You have to have all your friends listen to that, your family listen to that. The contents of that program are banned in Japan. So please, if you have family or friends in Japan, you need for them to hear that show. They need to hear what the government won't allow to be heard. Similar to the U.S. that way, isn't it? And in fact, the U.S. Wouldn't want, the nuclear industry, the nuclear industry in the U.S., really wouldn't want you to hear that program either, because after you hear about the ongoing, never-ending crisis in Fukushima, people will want to shut down all the nuclear plants here too. They should have never been built, okay? So, I don't know. It's all upside down, what can I tell you? And, you know, war is peace, really, you know. So we liberate people by bombing them. That seems to be what, you know, anyway. You know, going vegan is also resistance against Obama don't care. Obama don't care. That's what I call his medical plan, the bonanza for pharmaceuticals, the pharmaceutical industry, big pharma. Anyway, candidate Obama was for, you know, health care for all, single payer. But that's candidate. That's campaign talk, right? We know we're not supposed to believe campaign talk. So anyway, so what also makes me optimistic is that maybe, just maybe, there will be political activism. Maybe that will be awakened, and our peace and anti-war activism may be awakened from the coma, the anesthesia that is the Democrat Party and people like Obama, which, you know, as I think I heard it on the Jimmy Dore program, basically he said, or someone said, you know, Democrats are basically Republicans who are okay with abortion. So, you know, how true, right? Nothing is as it seems. The Democrat Party is the party of Wall Street and war, Patriot Act, police state, and anti-free speech, anti-constitution. But it's our party, right? So, because it says, it says it's for the people. It says it's for workers. It says it's for the environment, huh? You know? While Hillary goes around the globe fracking up the whole planet, she did on behalf of the fossil fuel companies, and Obama grants 1,500 drilling permits in the Gulf. Uh-huh. Yeah. Democrats for the environment. Nothing is as it seems to be. It seems to be, right? Everything is corrupt to the bone. And again, look at the Nobel Peace Prize, huh? Or the, I don't know, Nobel fake prize. I mean, Obama actually is the winner of the Nobel Peace Prize. You know, I mean, when he came in and started his presidency, I believe that was because he was inaugurated on a Tuesday and didn't start bombing until Friday, which shows great restraint for an American president. I think that is worthy of a Nobel Peace Prize, don't you think? And then I'm looking at the news from, well, not that long ago. It's still this month here. It says, this is in Common Dreams. It says, groups demand arrest of war mastermind Kissinger at Nobel Peace Prize Forum. By the way, I've been a peace activist since high school, marching against the Vietnam War, if you wonder, like, what's all this talk about peace on a vegan radio program, huh? Well, it was Tolstoy who said, as long as there are slaughterhouses, there will be battlefields. And isn't it interesting that peace activists like Denis Kucinich and Cindy Sheehan, Cesar Chavez, all vegan. How can you not be how can you be a peace activist, you know, march for peace, march against the war, and then, you know, talk about it all afterward with the blood of a murder victim running down your chin. You gotta dab that off there, right? So here this Common Dreams article says, groups demand arrest of war mastermind Kissinger at Nobel Peace Prize Forum. I think the Nobel Peace Prize has been contaminated and corrupted also at this point. Nobel Peace Prize Committee honors Kissinger a second time with speaking engagement at new forum on world peace. And so it says here, the Nobel Peace Prize Committee last month stunned many observers by choosing Henry Kissinger, the former Secretary of State behind the secret American bombings of Cambodia and who supported Argentina's dirty wars, among other things, and there are many other things. And he was invited to speak at a forum on the United States and world peace after the presidential election. Well, isn't that an oxymoron right there to say the United States and world peace? Really? Can those concepts actually go together? So continuing here, it says, in response on Tuesday, and when was this article? This was from, back on December 7th, okay. So in response on Tuesday, the progressive groups Roots Action and Nobel Peace Prize Watch issued a petition demanding that Norwegian officials arrest Kissinger. No. These people are above the law. Haven't we learned the law? No. How's that going to happen? When you reach a certain level of corruption and criminality, please, you're above the law. Let's not insult anyone's intelligence by thinking we're going to actually arrest criminals. And the biggest criminals and the war criminals, right? Really? Not going to happen. So where was I in this? It says in response. Okay, so they have a petition demanding that officials arrest Kissinger. The Nobel Committee has arranged, it says, continuing the article here, and a quote, the Nobel Committee has arranged for well-known war mastermind Henry Kissinger to speak as an honored guest at a forum that is part of the Nobel Peace Prize events. The petition states, several of Kissinger's crimes come under treaties that make it mandatory for Norway to prosecute Kissinger. It says Kissinger is complicit or a main actor in many violations of the Genocide Convention and of the Geneva Conventions. Nobel Peace Prize Watch says lays out Kissinger's actions in a PDF in great detail, making the case that Norway is obligated under international law to arrest the former Secretary of State. Kissinger was infamously awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 1973 for his role in the Vietnam War, a decision that comedian Tom Lehrer said at the time made political satire obsolete. So, I mean, really, Henry Kissinger wins the Nobel Peace Prize, and Barack Obama, you know, who drones on and on and on and on. He just drones on and on and on. Endless wars, endless intervention. He gets the Nobel Peace Prize. So you do start to really wonder about the Nobel Peace Prize itself, right? And, you know, we have people who are, and, you know, frankly, as far as I'm concerned, whether people accept that there is climate change, whether they deny it or accept it, really, to me, is practically irrelevant, because if they deny or ignore the solution, then, you know, what's the point, right? I mean, I keep saying that Bernie Sanders, recognized, there's climate change. Oh, there's climate change, but he wants a carbon tax, so that accomplishes nothing. So that accomplishes as much as Trump saying there is no climate change. And so the insurance policy, as I've been mentioning, is that we all go vegan. We're told by the world's top climate specialists, Robert Goodland and Jeff Anhang at the World Bank, that the number one cause of human greenhouse gas emissions is animal agriculture, responsible for at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions. And those same climate specialists tell us the only solution is a population shift to veganism. We need 50 to 85% of us, 50 to 85% of those, not us, who consume so-called livestock products, have to make the switch by 2020 or it will be too late. But we don't need a carbon tax. If we all go vegan, right, we don't need a carbon tax. We don't need an alternative energy infrastructure that would cost $35 trillion and take 20 years to build. We don't need anything other than we all go vegan. That frees up land for reforestation. And we all live happily ever after, hopefully, but we all live. there's an alternative to that, and that's not going vegan. And, you know, and all, what do we do? We'll just we'll all hold hands with Bill McKibben, right? As we burn up in wildfires, or we have the hurricanes, or all of that. So, by the way, did you notice we talk about climate change really every week on this program? We talk about climate change every week on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Is that not worth a contribution to Go Vegan Radio, 501c3 nonprofit? This, you know, if we're talking about climate change and we're looking at the solution, why, that could perhaps make this the most important program in the history of all media, even more important than, you know, Brian Williams on MSNBC. Right. So anyway, and we are going to continue to talk about climate change and continue to advocate for, you know, the only solution, which is going vegan. You don't hear that anywhere. You don't hear that on Democracy Now. Right. The most progressive of progressive programs. Right. So it really doesn't matter if people accept or deny. And here we have somebody who won a Nobel Prize. We have Ivor Yaver. Ivor Yaver denies that there's climate change. And, you know, there are people out there who would say, wow, a Nobel Prize winner who's denying climate change. Well, really doesn't matter if you deny or accept, as long as we all go vegan. Okay, so that's our insurance policy. If we don't do it by 2020, we've hit the tipping points. And, you know, we seem to be hitting tipping points faster than scientists seem to predict. So let's get a move on it, huh? We got to get everybody to go vegan. That's the New Year's resolution. Get as many people to go vegan in 2017 as possible. We only have until 2020, or we've reached those tipping points. And then if we do reach those tipping points, 1,700 U.S. cities face submersion by around 2050. So let's listen to Ivor Yaver, a few minutes of his talk, which he gave. Ivor Yaver did this talk at the 62nd meeting of Nobel laureates in 2012. And let's just hear how he starts off denying climate change. And you know, we'll pick up on the story in a little bit here. So let's hear that a clip of Ivor Yaver, Nobel Prize winner.
I was in a panel discussion in 2008. And it was a panel discussion about global warming. And I didn't really want to participate. But they said you really had to. And so I spent maybe half a day or so looking at Google. And I was horrified by what I found. And so I got interested in global warming a little bit. And because I was on this panel discussion, I looked at Google, and I looked at Yaver and global warming, because I'd been on one panel discussion. And I got roughly 40,000 results. If I look at my mind and look at my name and say Yaver and superconductivity, I got much fewer results. Global warming is really a hot topic. And what I said then, and which I still believe, is that global warming really has become a new religion, because you can't discuss it. It's not proper. If you say global, if you look at Linda here today, then all the people who are, you know, notable people, they have said climate change in their talks. All of them have said it. I don't know whether they know what they mean, but they have said it anyway. Everybody talks about climate change. So the American Physical Society, which I was a member, said the evidence is incontrovertible that global warming exists. Now, think about that. This is a physical society, and they say you cannot discuss global warming because we believe it's happening. It's like the Catholic Church. There are lots of incontrovertible truth in the Catholic Church, I'm sure. And here there's an incontrovertible truth in a physical society. So the only answer to that is to resign. So I resigned in 1911. And that actually made quite a much more story than I thought it would have. So it really, global warming really starts with these two people, Al Gore and Pakuri, or however you pronounce it. And what they did, they made this curve popular. I know that's hard to read from the audience, but on the vertical scale is degrees in 0.1 degrees. So roughly 1 degree is the whole vertical scale. And the horizontal scale is in years from 1860 to 19 or to 2000. And you see, the global warming has increased, but the fact the scale is like what dentists use when they advertise by the toothpaste, because the scale is absolutely distorted. I mean, there's 1 degree there. And for what does this curve measure? Well, this curve measures what does the average temperature for the world for a whole year and for a whole full Earth for 1 year. So there's an average temperature for the whole Earth for 1 year, and that measures in a fraction of a degree. So what does that mean? I think probably nothing. So let me talk about that again. From 1880 to 2015, the temperature has increased from 288 to 288.8 degrees Kelvin, 0.3%. I think the temperature has been amazingly stable. If I take where I live in Albany, New York, there are roughly 80 degree K difference between summer and winter at some time. And so would you think that 0.8 degree average on the Earth makes any difference to the climate in Albany? Is that sensible to you? Oh, the wrong way. So here is then where the temperature is measured. And you see there's point on the graph. So if you can read that, north of 60 degrees is 167 measurements. Between 30 and 60 degrees is quite a lot of measurements. The United States is all covered with things and stuff. So if you go finally to the South Pole, there are 8 thermometers, according to NASA. That's all they have, including the South Pole. 8 thermometers. And so if you had 8 thermometers to measure the average temperature in Germany, where would you put those 8 thermometers? 8 thermometers for the continent is nothing. And the fact is, as I deal with the South Pole, there had never been as cold on the South Pole as it is right now. There's more ice than there ever had been. And so, but people don't talk about that. They talk about the North Pole, where they have a warmer climate at the present time. And the other thing which upset me is that what is the optimum temperature for the Earth? Is that the temperature we have right now? That would be a miracle. Maybe it's 2 degrees warmer. Maybe it's 2 degrees colder. But nobody has told me what the optimal temperature is for the whole Earth. This is a little bit like American foreign policy. The foreign policy wants things to be as they are because we have it good in the United States. But even the foreign policy can't control the climate. The other thing is that both the alarmist and the deniers, I guess I'm quoted as a denier, measures the average temperature for the whole Earth for a whole year to a fraction of a degree, and that the result is significant. Of course it's not. How can you possibly measure the average temperature for the whole Earth and for the whole year and come up with a fraction of a degree? So I have this slide here. I think the average temperature of the Earth is equal to the emperor's new clothes. Was a boy who said, cried at Mike, the emperor has no clothes on. And I would cry out and say, you can't measure the temperature for the whole Earth at such accuracy. I was in Beijing I think it was in 74 or 75, and Beijing was a village. There were three or four cars there, and we had control of one of them. I was back in Berlin, Beijing, like a few years ago, and you can't cross the streets for cars. And there's buildings which are like 30, 40 stories high everywhere. And so what had that done with the temper for Beijing, you think? I mean, and if you think that when you measure temperature to 1900, the thermometer was standing sort of in the countryside, and now we go 1910, the more dense population density, and then the thermometers broke, you got new thermometers. And how can you think that I can measure this to a fraction of a degree? It's ridiculous. Now, this is what they have come up with, however, and this is for the last 19 years, roughly speaking, the temperature has not gone up. It's been constant for 19 years, almost as long as the life of the students here. They're probably at 23, 24 years old. So it hasn't gone up. And there was a big peak in 98, that's very recognizable. So what did the people who measure temperature do with that? Well, here is the latest temperature they have measured now, and they see the curve here, and if you look at the edge here, it goes up. I made a bit better one here. So the temperature here goes up. How can that be when I just showed you the other curve, the temperature has been constant? Well, the reason for that is that they include now the ocean. But for 100 years, the ocean has not been included. Why do you think they include the ocean? Because it's more accurate, or because they can fiddle with the data? That's what NASA does. So Obama said last year that 2014 was the hottest year ever. But it's not true. It's not the hottest year. So if you don't believe I'm cheating you, here's some satellite data, and this is the peak in 98, and you see basically the satellite data shows the same thing. The temperature has not increased. So what is then the greenhouse effect? Well, without the atmosphere, the Earth would have been roughly 35 degrees warmer, roughly speaking. Now, from 1998 from 1898 to 1998, the temperature has increased 0.8 degrees. And the CO2 concentration has increased from 295 to 367, or roughly 72 parts per million in 100 years. That's what has happened. That's the fact. I'm not making this up. Now, from 1998, which is basically the hottest year, the CO2 has increased from 367 to 403, roughly 36 parts per million. That's half of the previous increase. So why hasn't the temperature increased 0.4 degrees then? I mean, if you're a physicist, for heaven's sake, and here is the experiment, and you have a theory, and the theory doesn't agree with the experiment, then you have to cut out the theory. You were wrong with the theory. See, that's half the thing. It should have been, but it isn't. So you can't believe then the people who are the alarmists say that CO2 is a terrible thing, and therefore you have to not drive and use solar cells and stuff, because otherwise the world will go to pot. But it's not true. It's absolutely not true. So nature, in its wisdom, this was happened actually in 2012 when I gave another talk on global warming here, has come up with a magazine, and they want to cash in on the fad. My friend said I shouldn't make fun of nature because then I won't publish my papers. But I don't publish my papers anyway, so I'm safe there. So they had an article in there, for example, that corn yield in Africa decreased 1% for each day over 30 degree Kelvin. See, that's a very difficult thing to determine.
Okay, so we've been listening to the somebody who's heralded as one of the chief climate deniers, climate change. Whoops, What did I do? I think I started the music, Ben, instead of stopping the talk. Okay. So, Ivor Yaver, there you go. He is, you know, he's held as a, you know, very well-respected denier of climate change because he has won the Nobel Prize. So, we also know that Henry Kissinger won the Nobel Prize, and Barack Obama won the Nobel Prize. So let's look at Skeptical Science. It's a website about, you know, getting skeptical about global warming skepticism. And again, to me, it doesn't matter whether you accept or deny. What's important is the solution. We all have to go vegan, but that's not the point here. Let me just talk to you a little bit about what Skeptical Science says. So it says, we often see scientists from non-climate fields who believe they have sufficient experience to understand climate science despite having done minimal research on the subject. And they mention William Hepper, Fritz Wahrenheuth, and Bob Carter, for example. As he admits in his own words, Nobel Prize-winning physicist Ivor Yaver fits this mold perfectly. Quote, I am not really terribly interested in global warming. You heard him say this on the piece that we just played here, right? Quote, I am not really terribly interested in global warming like most physicists. I don't think much about it. But in 2008, I was in a panel here about global warming, and I had to learn something about it. And I spent a day or so, half a day maybe, on Google, and I was horrified by what I learned. And I'm going to try to explain to you why that was the case. End quote. Here's his education in climate science. He spent a day or two on Google. All right. All right. Well, now we know the credibility of a Nobel Prize winner here. So so this, then again, Skeptical Science says, that quote comes from a presentation Ivor Yaver gave to the 62nd meeting of the Nobel laureates in 2012 for some unknown reason on the subject of climate change. As Yaver notes at the beginning of his talk, he has become more famous for his contrarian views on global warming than for his Nobel Prize, which have made him something of a darling to the climate contrarian movement and climate denial enablers. So it says, in this post, we will examine the claims made by Yaver in the talk and show that his contrarian climate opinions come from a position of extreme ignorance on the subject, as Yaver admits. Yaver personifies the classic stereotype of the physicist who thinks he understands all scientific fields of study. So it says here, accuracy of the surface temperature record. In this talk, Yaver spent a lot of time criticizing Al Gore and Rajendra Pachauri, IPCC chairman, that's the International Panel on Climate Change, from the UN, for winning the Nobel Peace Prize for, according to Yaver, making the global surface temperature record famous. It continues here, Yaver proceeded to question the accuracy of the surface temperature record, ultimately asking, how can you measure the average temperature of the Earth? I don't think that's possible. Unfortunately, this simply displays an ignorance regarding the surface temperature record, whose accuracy has been confirmed time and time again, and then it has links to all the confirmations, and which is also consistent with lower troposphere temperatures measurements as illustrated in Figure 1. Troposphere? Glenn Tramblin has answered Yaver's question in great detail in his four-part series of Averages and Anomalies, and Kevin C. also had an excellent and detailed post in the recent temperature measurements in the global warming signal. The answers to these questions are out there for those who are willing to spend a little time. As you can see, Ivor Yaver was willing to spend very little time, right? Okay. So here, continuing in what this post says, Yaver also disputed the significance of the measured 0.8 degrees Celsius average global surface warming over the past 130 years, comparing it to a human fever and the temperature at which he had to maintain tissue for cell growth during his own biophysical experiments, also showing the following slide, which he did, you know, in the talk just played. So Yaver does not seem to know how to put the observed 0.8 degree Celsius global surface temperature change in proper context. It may sound small in comparison to the absolute global temperatures in Kelvin or in comparison to changes in human body temperatures, but it is a very large change in global surface temperature, especially over a period as brief as 130 years. So it says, in addition to this rapid, in addition to this rapid surface warming, the global oceans have also been accumulating heat at an incredible rate, the equivalent of more than two Hiroshima little boy atomic bomb detonations per second every second over the past half century. That sounds like it should be repeated here, huh? So, in addition to this rapid surface warming, the global oceans have also been accumulating heat at an incredible rate, the equivalent of more than two Hiroshima little boy atomic bombs, atomic bomb detonations per second, every second over the past 50 years. Can you believe that? Presumably, a physicist of Yaver's stature... Presumably, a physicist of Yaver's stature would appreciate the magnitude of this global energy accumulation. As a physicist, Yaver should also understand that seemingly small objects and quantities can have large effects, but instead he seems to rely on incorrect common sense, that's in quote here, quotation marks in the air, common sense perceptions which are based on ignorance of the subject at hand. CO2 versus water vapor. We didn't get to Yaver talking about that in his discussion, but it's interesting as to what he said, so we'll show you what they say about it here. So it says CO2 versus water vapor. As another example of this behavior... meaning that he's ignorant on the subject, basically. As another example of this behavior, Yaver proceeds to demonstrate that he also does not understand the role of the greenhouse effect in climate change. Quote, water vapor is a much, much stronger greenhouse gas than the CO2. If you look out of the window, you see the sky, you see the clouds, and you don't see the CO2. End quote. Then back to this post here. It says, needless to say, the second sentence above represents a very bizarre argument. Yaver is either arguing that CO2 is a visible gas, it is not, and the fact that you can't see it means there is too little in the atmosphere to have a significant warming effect, or that only visible gases can warm the planet, or some other similarly misinformed assertion. That clouds are visible to the human eye and CO2 isn't simply, read the way the writer intended, Bobby. Okay, we will. That clouds are visible to the human eye and CO2 isn't simply is not relevant to the greenhouse effect and global warming. It's also worth noting that like CO2, water vapor is not visible. Clouds are condensed water droplets, not water vapor. Additionally, water vapor does not drive climate change. Okay, and then I think he also went on to some discussion about deforestation. Let's see here. He said, okay, Yaver continues ticking off the most common climate myths, going from arguing that it may not even be warming to claiming the warming is insignificant to asserting the warming is caused by water vapor, and ultimately that the warming is indeed caused by human influences. Quoting Yaver here, is it possible that all the paved roads and cut-down forests are the cause of global warming, not CO2? But nobody talks about that, end quote of Yaver there. And then the Post says, climate scientists do, of course, investigate and discuss the effects of deforestation and urban influences. It talks about the 2007 IPCC report discussing the influences of deforestation in great detail. So, and again, I recommend the work of Robert Goodland and Jeff Anhang. Just look at Google Livestock and Climate Change. And a lot of that will be examined in that. And in terms of deforestation, well, again, we know that animal agriculture is the main cause of deforestation. The forests are being chopped down either to grow probably GMO feed for animals or for animals to graze. So anyway, somebody who does take climate change seriously, even though Ivor Yaver doesn't. I don't know that we'll have time to get into this one today, but maybe next week. So Ivor Yaver has been discredited in his approach, and then next week we'll read something from the Navy Times. Okay, as I said, we talk about climate change every week on this program, and there's Ivor Yaver denying it. I believe that he wasn't saying anything about the oceans rising or whatever. But next week, we'll look at an article in the Navy Times. The Navy Times, the headline is, Rising Oceans Threaten to Submerge 128 Military Bases, report says, or so it says, rising oceans will swallow parts of the world's biggest naval bases by the end of the century, according to experts who warn that it will take billions of dollars in upgrades to prepare these facilities. Naval Station Norfolk, Virginia, and 17 other U.S. military installations sitting on waterfront property are looking at hundreds of floods a year, and in some cases could be mostly submerged by 2100. So looks like the Navy is taking it seriously, it says, according to a new report from the Union of Concerned Scientists. Based on these calculations, the report says 3 foot sea level, a 3 foot sea level rise would threaten 128 U.S. military bases valued at roughly $100 billion. So the Navy is taking climate change seriously, even though perhaps Nobel Prize-winning scientists aren't. And, you know, it's almost like, you know, if you're a climate denier, I mean, it's almost like, well, look at that. That's almost like an Al-Qaeda kind of action, isn't it? Deny climate change so nobody does anything about it, and the whole U.S. Navy will be underwater, right? There you go. It was like originally I thought, you know, Al-Qaeda and whatever other made-up groups that are out there that were started by the U.S. or funded by U.S. friends like Saudi Arabia and Qatar, you know, people who give tons of money to Hillary Clinton and she gives them tons of weapons and I don't know. So anyway, I used to think that, well, the, you know, if you really translate the videos that were coming from the terrorists from the Arabic, it would actually say, Americans, keep eating what you're eating. And that, in a sense, well, you know, heart disease and cancer and stroke and although those diseases kill more Americans than all wars combined. So Americans, keep eating what you're eating. And then now, I think the same can be said if Al-Qaeda, if the mission of Al-Qaeda or a terrorist group is to destroy, you know, the U.S. military, the Navy, and you know, all of its facilities, right? What was that, 18 facilities, waterfront facilities? Hey, Americans, just keep eating what you're eating. There is no climate change. Nope, nothing to worry about. And there you have it. So what a great military strategy that is by Al-Qaeda. Americans, keep eating what you're eating. That'll destroy the citizenry, destroy the military. Perfect, don't you think? I think it's almost time for Professor Gary Francione to join us. And I did want to do a little year-end review, so perhaps after we talk to Professor Francione, we'll do that. And again, I want to thank Vegetarian House for its support year after year. Vegetarian House, a 100% vegan restaurant in San Jose, California, one of the best vegan restaurants in the world. Just go to vegetarianhouse.us. The food is phenomenal. Check out the menu. Also, Vegetarian House caters. So if you're in the Bay Area, you have an event coming up, you have a business event, social event, you're getting married, you want the food to be great, you want to impress your new in-laws, make sure that you have Vegetarian House catering. Vegetarian House is at 520 East Santa Clara Street in San Jose. Again, the website is vegetarianhouse.us. We will continue. By the way, please support this program and our projects, our climate projects, our music projects, our education and activism projects, our events that we want to organize. Donate to Go Vegan Radio. You can find the donate button at goveganradio.com. We continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook, and two extraneous Bob Linden pages. Am I hearing you? Am I hearing me over a speaker there?
No. We're hearing you very clearly, Bob.
No.
Okay.
No.
I'm getting some feedback from here, from myself, but and I don't know if Ben's hearing that, but. I can work my way through the echo through my brain here. So so we're back, and actually that was the longest break actually in our 16 years of being on air with Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We just took a 24-hour break. So if you were with us. If you were with us when we went to commercial and you're still there, I really want to thank you for your patience. It's great. That's great, great loyalty. So we took a 24-hour break, you know, so we're kind of casual here, but we did have technical difficulties again, you know, because of, Russia. I mean, Jill Stein. I mean, Bernie. I mean, Comey. I mean, Satan. I mean, Satan. We had to take a Satan break. So we are back, and we are being joined by Professors Gary Francione and Anna Charlton. And, and earlier in the show, by the way, I was speaking about a Nobel Prize winner who was trying to debunk climate change, but his Nobel Prize wasn't in his area. So we debunked the debunker, and that was the Nobel Prize winner. And we also noted that Henry Kissinger won the Nobel Peace Prize, and Obama won the Nobel Peace Prize, and Obama, I don't know, he has me wishing like for the good old days of, like George W. Bush or Richard Nixon, maybe, the way things are going with him. And I do want to send my thank you to our president for his Christmas gift to America, which I think is totalitarianism. All right, thank you, President Obama. I just want Professors Francione and Charlton to just hear a little bit of what happened. There's an article in Common Dreams. So the headline is, "Under Cover of Christmas, Obama Establishes Controversial Anti-Propaganda Agency." And so what happened here is, it says, in the final hours before the Christmas holiday weekend, U.S. President Barack Obama on Friday quietly signed the 2017 National Defense Authorization Act, NDAA, into law, and buried within the $619 billion military budget is a controversial provision that establishes a national anti-propaganda center that critics warn could be dangerous for press freedoms. The Countering, this is what it's called, the Countering Disinformation and Propaganda Act, introduced by Republican Senator Rob Portman of Ohio, establishes the Global Engagement Center under the State Department, which coordinates efforts to recognize, understand, expose, and counter foreign, state, and non-state propaganda and disinformation efforts aimed at undermining United States national security interests. Let me see, just another little bit here about this little Christmas present from Obama. Further, the law authorizes grants to non-governmental agencies to help collect and store samples in print, online, and social media, disinformation, misinformation, and propaganda directed at the U.S. and its allies, as well as counter efforts by foreign entities to the disinformation, misinformation, and propaganda to influence the policies and social and political stability of the U.S. and allied nations. So that's from Common Dreams. And so basically, we could be charged under this act, couldn't we? I mean, what we talk about, like, you know, I mean, the common interests seem to be, you know, meat, dairy, fish, and egg consumption is good for you. And what's a vegan radio show doing? Your propaganda. Anyway, I find this really chilling. But what might you think, professors of law, Francione and Charlton?
Well, look, no law can contravene the Constitution. The Constitution says that that you can't regulate speech, that there's freedom of speech. So now I realize I'm not naive, obviously, and I realize that if there's no will to respect and enforce the First Amendment, then the First Amendment will not be respected, and laws may be enforced in ways that contravene the First Amendment. So, I mean, it's hard. I mean, I find this. I mean, look, what's going on now with propaganda and false and fake news issues? The Democrats are horrified that they lost the election. They weren't supposed to lose the election. They're upset that they lost the election. So now, what's being blamed is fake news, which basically means news that's
true.
Well, I mean, look, I mean, I think that a lot of mainstream sources are freaked out by broadcasters like RT Russia Today. They get very upset by that because, you know, RT has stories that they don't cover. RT sometimes exposes them for being inadequate in their reporting, etc. And so, I mean, I think people are concerned about this. And you know, I mean, but Bob, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Anna, what do you think? I mean,
I think we're in an atmosphere where someone wanted to, you know, something had to be done after after all this, the question about fake news at the election. So I think it's quite likely that this is a clunky government response to that. As Gary was saying, without taking a naive stance, I mean, the U.S. Constitution has such a strong vote against prior restraint of speech, much more than many other countries, including Western countries. So there really is an uphill battle to shut down a lot of speech. Now, there's the more nuanced question of access and who gets to speak and that sort of thing. But an actual prior restraint of speech, shutting somebody up, shutting down the actual words, is not that easy to do and is really against American jurisprudence on that. So far be it for me to have confidence in the government and think that what they're doing is a good idea. I'm not sure that this changes very much.
Well, I don't know. It's pretty amazing to have a you know, countering disinformation and propaganda act. I was arrested numerous times on free speech issues. So, you know, that's apparently when we still had a constitution. I mean, I find something like this traitorous. I mean, I think people, swear to protect and defend the constitution, and they're ripping it to shreds. And something like this, I just think is really chilling. And again, you say it relates to access, you know, perhaps internet access, and you're talking about the fake news. Well, the mainstream media has been the main source of fake news that got us into a war with Iraq.
I agree. What is
and also just the thing that the fact that Brian Williams has a job in mainstream media, you know, that in itself, like, that says, hey, we are fake news. He's the poster boy for fake news. This guy who in an interview with Matt Lauer said that he didn't know when he was lying on camera. So, you know, I mean, so I just get nervous, you know, because I think that For however many years this show has been a violation of the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act. I would like people not to buy animal, you know, products derived from animals, and I'm hurting their profits. I could be prosecuted now.
Well, yeah, but you haven't been, and we haven't seen, as far as I know, prosecutions for people engaging in speech. We haven't seen. Are you aware? I mean, I'm not aware of anybody.
I thought there was a case where some activists were writing slogans in chalk on the street and were arrested under it, I think. If I remember correctly.
Hold on, Bob. We just got a call. I'm sorry. I think that, you know, I mean, I don't know. I don't know about whom you are speaking. And I think that, you know, people can get arrested for, you know, writing on chalk on the street because that may be defacing public property. I mean, the right to engage in free speech is not an absolute right. I mean, for example, the government can impose legitimate time, place, and manner restrictions. So they can say, well, you can't write on chalk on the sidewalk. They can also say, for example, you can't use a megaphone without in certain areas, or without a license, you know, without a permit and things like that. I mean, what they can't do is shut you up completely. I mean, I think, you know, we've actually seen some infringements of what I regard are infringements of the First Amendment. For example, free speech zones where they sort of keep people away from public officials in a safe area. That concerns me because, you know, the idea of free speech is it's supposed to be effective. You're supposed to be able to speak to the, you know, you're supposed to speak to the, you're supposed to be able to speak in an effective way. And if they have you in a free speech zone, you know, miles away from where someone is, you know, that's a problem. On the other hand, you know, the government's position is, well, they have to do that sort of stuff because they have to protect people because of terrorism and things like that. I mean, look, I don't want you to think I'm particularly optimistic about this. All I'm saying is that we have a First Amendment. The First Amendment says you can't restrict speech. If the people wish to keep that, I mean, you know, but legal rules are only as effective as, you know, you can have laws, but if people, you know, don't care, don't have the values, if this country, if people have stopped caring about free speech, then, you know, then the government can do pretty much what it wants to do, because the legal rules are useful only to the extent that there's a will to enforce them. And so I think that, you know, I'm not sure that I would declare, I certainly don't think the First Amendment's dead. I think there's a problem. I mean, if there's a problem, Bob, it's the average, you know, that a lot of people don't care about free speech anymore, and that, you know, or a lot of people don't care about it. And if enough people don't care about it, then the government really doesn't have to worry about it. But I still think there are people who do care about it. I mean, a lot of people don't, but a lot of people do. And the fact is, you haven't, you know, they haven't taken you off the air yet. If they've arrested some people for walking, writing in chalk on the sidewalk, I don't know anything about that case, but that might be just defacing public property. I mean,
right. There's often something that law enforcement can pin the activity in, that is, you know, expressive activity or speech, and say, well, we can stop you because you're defacing public property, as Gary was saying, or you're causing some sort of problem. But often you get these waves of statutes or in this case, an agency being created in response to something. It, as you were speaking, it made me think of the hunter harassment laws, which the gun lobby and the sports, you know, the sportsman shooting lobby got passed in every state. And I know locally here in New Jersey, we challenged that law and said, no, you can't stop people talking about hunting to hunters where they're going to encounter them and having, you know, a civilized, content-rich encounter with a hunter outside. It can't be stopped on free speech grounds. And indeed, the courts in New Jersey said no. It doesn't mean that you can go and do something that could otherwise be prohibited by, you know, harassing someone, assaulting somebody, causing a disturbance which has nothing to do with the content of what you're expressing. But New Jersey clearly said, and other states have clearly said, that yes, you can have statutes like that on the books, but they can't be interpreted in a way that violates the free speech protections of the Constitution. So, you know, a lot of heavy breathing goes into some of these legislative initiatives after people feel threatened or there's some interest that is really trying to protect itself, but it usually sort of settles down to be more respectful of free speech principles. I mean, you, as you say, you've been on the air many, many years. There are people posting all over about animal abuse and stuff. And yes, the Animal Enterprise Terrorist Act could be used in some instances, but there are just too many people doing stuff. The government has lost control of speech in its myriad forms right now. It's a hydra that they just cannot control anymore. So it's depressing, and it shows an impulse that we all find distressing. But we're going to be speaking, you're going to be speaking, and if that doesn't tie into the idea that we should all be advocating in the new year, I don't know what does.
I mean, Bob, I don't want to deny that that there are certain aspects of society that are becoming very police state-like, but that's been happening for a while. I mean, that didn't happen last weekend, and that's not something Obama did like a few days ago. I mean, we've been moving in that direction for a while, and people in poor communities have been dealing with, police oppression and have been dealing with the police state for a while now. And so I think in a lot of ways, I don't want to be super optimistic. It's just, I don't think what happened last weekend should make you more significantly more pessimistic than you were before you read about that. Obviously the government is concerned, particularly, the Democratic administration is concerned. It lost the election and it's got them completely freaked out. And so now they want to blame it on Vladimir Putin or on Martians or whatever they want to do. And you're seeing some of that, some of the death throes of that. Obama will be out in a few weeks, Trump is going to have, or at least according to what we're seeing, is going to have better relationships with Russia, which is going to probably create. I mean, we'll have a whole set of problems in the new year, Bob. You can look forward to a whole set of new problems, new problems arising.
Breitbart moves into the White House.
Yeah, exactly.
Earlier, Anna, you were talking about people concerned about access, and I think that people are concerned about their accounts vanishing from Facebook and Twitter and the policing of those. I mean, suddenly that's become, our communication now, and I think that there's concern about the fact checkers and all of that,
Sure. There are so many different ways that we're communicating. We're one step ahead of attempts to shut things down and control them. It left me behind so long ago. I will never catch up with all these different possibilities. And it's obviously very hard for the government to keep up with everything.
Well, it's trying. It's trying.
Yeah, it's trying. And this is probably, can I think of a vegan word? I'm going to say ham-fisted, but it's a clumsy, way of doing it. Governments always want to control things and shut things down. They haven't been terribly good at it so far. People are resourceful. People are getting very technologically sophisticated. I mean, the protections that we have against governments wanting to listen to us and look at what we're doing are vanishing. As you know, you can get warrants in practically any circumstance to follow people's communications. So that's just the world that we're living in. But there are a lot of people talking. You're talking. We're talking, many people in every social justice movement, every dissenting situation are talking, and they can't shut everybody up. And
and the government is probably listening to us right now.
Well, they may be.
That's a caution that I think everybody should. The lawyers are coming out in here is that we should all think that what we're talking at, what we're saying in a public space, everyone has access to it, including the government. So perhaps we should all be sober in terms of what we're saying, not fearful and not saying what needs to be said. But not every thought that goes through our heads has to be written down if we don't want everyone in the world to look at it. So, if there's prudent editing that we decide to do in our self-interest, that's fine. But, if when they come knocking on my door, I'll worry about it. But otherwise, we're all going to be out there talking.
I mean, Bob, in many ways, first of all, I don't want to denigrate your concerns. All I'm saying is that I just don't think that the situation got markedly worse last week, as you seem to think it did. I think it's been bad for a while. I think there have been problems for a while. But I also think that the reality is you can't really put the stuff back in the bottle. I mean, the internet is not something you can pull a plug on. And, you know, I hope. Well, I don't think you can. You know, I really don't think you can. And I think that, as I said before, there are a lot of people who don't care about free speech. There are a lot of people who don't care about privacy anymore. But, you know, there are a lot of people who do. And so as long as there are people who do, then the government will be limited in what it can do. I think, you know, what's happened recently is largely the result of a Democratic administration that is reeling over the fact that it lost an election that, you know, it believed it had some moral right to win or whatever. I don't know. I mean, it's just the Democrats are obviously very upset about what happened. I mean, I find this blame it all on Russia thing to be absolutely humorous. I mean, the reality is the Russians are busy doing all sorts of cyber things against the United States. And the United States is I'm quite sure. I mean, look, all nations are busy. every nation. I mean, look at the stuff that's come out in the past several years about who's been hacking whom. I mean, it's not that this is like sort of started recently. And I think that this idea that, well, oh, now, God, we've got to really be all upset because Vladimir Putin is controlling, you know, our elections is just beyond comical. It's almost, I mean, it's silly.
It's hysterical. It really is. I'm amazed by it, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's silly. And I think
evidence also. You know, I mean, right? They're made up. It's exactly. All fake news. The fake news makers are the ones complaining about fake news.
About fake news, right? Exactly. And so I don't really think, as I said, you know, I think we've got problems, major problems here. But I don't think they started last weekend. I think we've had them for a while. I think we've had a government that's been in many ways non-responsive to the people for a long time. Which, unfortunately or fortunately, however you want to look at it, that's exactly why we have Donald Trump. You know, I mean, Donald Trump was the person that people gravitated to because Bernie Sanders was no longer running, but people gravitated to him because they believed that he was the person who was going to stop the government from doing all these things, you know, stop an out of control government. Now, you know, I'm not sure why anybody believes he's going to do that, but, you know, they see him as an outsider who might do that. You know, whereas I think Bernie Sanders would have made some significant changes in the way the government both is structured and the way it operates. But that's not that didn't happen. We have somebody else.
I believe that actually Bernie won the primaries, and there is enough fraud and evidence about that to where had the votes really been counted, and there, you know, there's a lot out there on, you know, the rigging of the primaries, and also that the Clinton campaign was pushing for extreme Republican candidates like Trump. So the Clinton campaign was pushing Trump, Ted Cruz, and Ben Carson as its acceptable opponents, the ones it thought it would easily beat. It didn't know that. If, you know, people wanted to reject. well, I don't know. It seemed like the, you know, somebody running for president who has FBI investigations going. You know, that's a concern right there. And I don't know. It seems like you know.
Well, you know what's interesting.
Democratic Party.
There were all these leaks about, you know, about what was going on in the Clinton campaign, and all the Clinton campaign kept on, they was talking about Vladimir Putin. I mean, nobody was talking about the fact that there were all sorts of revelations in those documents that were really very disturbing. And they weren't denying that, you know, they weren't admitting that they said those things, but they weren't denying them either. And they weren't addressing them. But I do think, look, I think in the end, Bob, the reason why Donald Trump got elected was because people we're tired of the same old, same old. Now, and not all of them, you know, the thing of it is that not all of them were racists and sexists and whatnot. Some of them were for sure. You know, some of them were for sure. Some of them have some very, very disturbing, you know, position. But I think a lot of the people who voted for him were people, people who have lost their jobs, people who have seen the quality of their lives go to hell in the past, you know, a few years, and who feel that they're the forgotten people, and Donald Trump sort of spoke to them. And, you know, now, do I think he's going to deliver on what he said to them? I don't see how he possibly could, to be frank with you. I don't see how he could. But he spoke to those people, and he didn't take the position that the United States was California and New York and everything in between was a flyover. He didn't take that position. And he went and he talked to them and he told them that he was going to make their lives better. Now, as I say, I don't see how he can deliver on his promises, but that's the reason why he's there. And so in many ways, you know, people, there is life. There's life in the old, you know, in the old body politic yet. And I think a lot of people do care about things, but what they're concerned about first and foremost is making a living and having a decent standard of living. And a lot of people don't have that anymore. You know, and so I think, you know, I think and a lot of those people, Bob, frankly, are so worried about where their next meal is going to come from. In certain ways, they don't really care about, you know, about whether or not, you know, the government, you know, squeezes, you know, news sources or tries to suppress speech. In many ways, those concerns are secondary. But as I say, I think things are not going in a good direction. I've thought that for a while. All I'm saying, Bob, is I don't think there's any reason to be more pessimistic this week than there was last week. It was going to hell before last week. Whatever happened last week with Obama and the fake news thing and Vladimir Putin taking over the world and whatnot is the latest iteration of silliness. But I don't think it's gotten significantly worse or qualitatively worse. And I don't think you need to worry. And I want to talk about something positive before we get off the air tonight. Is that okay, or are we not allowed to talk about positive?
That's okay. Oh, by the way, but before we get to something positive, and yeah.
Go ahead.
I mean, I think, yeah. So I just wanted to mention, you know, because I mentioned I was arrested on a number of occasions related to freedom of speech issues. I was the one using the megaphone, and I was the one who was fighting that you have to have a permit, that, you know, that you have to pay $90 and you have to apply, you know, days in advance. You know, I won all of my cases. I think there were three or four. And the one I lost was when they made use of a megaphone a traffic infraction in Beverly Hills. And I couldn't, I went to traffic court, and the judge didn't want to hear anything about free speech. And that was the only time, because I, you know, in Los Angeles, I used the megaphone. They wound up arresting me. They said trespassing, but I couldn't really be trespassing because it was a place where the public was invited. And so then they changed it to amplified sound, and then they lost on constitutional. They dropped the charges. My charges were dropped everywhere except in Beverly Hills, where somehow my use of a megaphone was a traffic infraction. So the judge didn't want to hear anything about the First Amendment. So that was my...
In some ways, that's there's a good side to that too, is that the government is in those cases reduced to talking about the means and the loudness of the delivery and something, but they're not saying we're going to arrest you, Bob Lyndon, because you said these words. And even when things look pretty dark, there is still protection for a lot of content. There's still protection for the fact of what you're saying. So moving against something that could be called propaganda because of what is being said is still somewhat of an uphill battle. So they will go against you because of, you know, a zoning thing or a megaphone thing or something like that. But you haven't told me that they went after you because of the content. Now, you may have come into the ambit of their attention because of what you were saying.
And Bob,
but the message was not silenced, so that's what we have to defend.
Bob, the police have, for as long as
right.
I have been,
it's nothing new.
I have been a lawyer since 1981. Since 1981.
Well, now it's 1984, so it's not that
right,
long.
Right. But all of the, but the state has, or the government has always had the right, and it's always exercised the right to impose reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions on speech. So if they want to stop you from using a megaphone, they can do that. If they want to stop you from you know, stopping traffic at particular times or stopping traffic at all, they can do that. They can, you know, what they can't do, as Anna points out, is they can't regulate what you're doing because of the content of your speech. They have to be content neutral. Now, are they content neutral all the time? And the answer is no, of course they're not. But they've got it when they're not content neutral. They've
got to look at something else.
They've right, got they've right. got to look for something else. They've got it. You know, they've got, you know, are they, you know, if you were using your megaphone in Beverly Hills promoting animal experimentation or something, would they have bothered you? Probably not. I don't know. Maybe they wouldn't have. Maybe they would have. I don't know. But they might not have. But you were using your megaphone talking about some animal issue. And so that attracts attention and they want to shut you down. So what they do is they say, well, you can't use a megaphone, or you can't, you know, you can't assemble in this time at this time, you know, because you're going to stop, you know, you're going to stop rush hour traffic. You have to, or you have to get a permit. Now, they can't charge exorbitant sums of money for permits, but they can charge administrative fees. You know, they can't charge you hundreds of dollars. And there have been, you know, and as a general matter, they don't, you know, when they, we used to deal with those cases when we had the clinic, and we always got them to back off. They tried, but we always got them to back down, and they always stop. You know, they would say, well, you know, we want $500 for a permit to protest. No, you guys can't do that. You know, you can't do that. Okay. So they'd back off. And so I don't think it's gotten any worse, but I'm insisting on saying something positive because we're going to go
all
over time.
Right, all
okay.
Right.
Okay.
I
went
positive. Here's the first. We're on the air 16 years now. Now we have to have something positive. Okay.
Yes, exactly.
Great.
Okay. Well, this.
What's so positive?
We got two things coming up this weekend. I'm really excited about. Anna and I are doing our second public webinar on Friday night, 5 to 7 Eastern Standard Time. Which, you know, we wanted to, you know, this one we tried to sort of make it, you know, doable for people in Western Europe as well. So that'll only be between 10 and 12 for them. It's going to be on advocacy and on things that we can do in 2017 to be more effective advocates. And people can go to my Facebook page, which is Gary Elf, or is it my middle initial there? I'm pulling up. Yes, it's Gary. I don't even know what my Gary Elf Francie on the Abolitionist Approach to Animal Rights Facebook page, and they can register. It's free, doesn't cost anything. 2 hours. We're gonna open it up with some ideas we have about advocacy, and then people can ask questions and whatnot. And it's gonna be pretty exciting, and I'm really looking forward to it. And I thought, you know, I wanted to do it. I wanted to have this at a year end sort of thing, but I was really worried that we were going to have nobody signing up for the thing because it's Friday night, and that, you know, for people in Australia, that's already Saturday, so we're already into New Year's Eve. And so I thought, you know, we're not going to be able to get anybody to do this. As of this moment, I just checked the list. We have 312 people who are registered for this thing. It's Friday night, 5 to 7 p.m.
Eastern time.
So that'll be 2 o'clock your time. And it's, as I said, if they go to Gary L. Francio on Animal Rights, the Abolitionist Approach Facebook page, they can sign up for it. You know, and we've got, as I said, 312 people, which just blows me away that we've got 312 people who are willing to spend some time on basically New Year's Eve talking about animal advocacy. It gives me hope for the future, despite the incredible inordinate pessimism of my friend Bob Linden. The thing that we're doing is on Saturday. It's going on now. It's called Thunderclap. Thunderclap is this, it's hard for me to talk about computer things because I understand so little about it. But
When you say thunderclap, I immediately, my music radio background says thunderclap. That Thunderclap Newman did a song, that's Something in the Air. That was a great, classic.
Okay, well, then if that gives you warm feelings about this, that's good.
It does.
Thunderclap is I guess it's a platform or whatever. It's and what it does is, propose a cause or some sort of campaign, and what it does is you invite people to support your cause or your campaign, and by support, not with money. Support means,
well, then count me out.
They give Thunderclap permission to place to post something in their timeline or in their Twitter or Tumblr feeds on one occasion at the same time. So we have a Thunderclap going where we're asking people to support our Thunderclap. And on Saturday afternoon, this coming Saturday, New Year's Eve, at 12 noon Eastern Standard Time, Thunderclap will place in the feeds of the people who have signed up. They will place one message. It's a simple little poster, and it says "Go Vegan, Stay Vegan 2017," and then it gives the URL for howdoigovegan.com and for our Facebook page, howdoigovegan.com, and then it says "Take Nonviolence Seriously," and it's going to put that in the timelines and Tumblr and Twitter feeds of the people who sign up. And thus far, we have, I'm looking at the page right now, thus far on Saturday afternoon, 283,000 people will be exposed to this message.
Wow.
And it's not costing anybody anything. It's sort of the equivalent, Bob, of a flash mob. You know what a flash mob is? You know, culture's changed so much, Bob, it's past people like you and me just right up. But flash mobs, you know, where people sort of, you know, they send out some sort of cyber, you know, like a message appears in Facebook and it tells everybody to assemble in a particular place. I remember one night, I learned what a flash mob was when I was in one. We were several years ago, Anna and I were in South Orange, New Jersey on a Saturday night. And there were, you know, we came out of the restaurant we were in and it was a warm night and people were on the street, but there were thousands of young people. And, you know, I said to Anna, you know, what's going on here? And, you know, she didn't know. And I, you know, and we were later told it was a flash mob. And I said, what the hell's a flash mob? And they said, well, apparently, you know, somebody put in somebody put a Facebook post up or a Twitter tweet or whatever saying everybody should, you know, everybody who reads this should assemble in South Orange. And sure enough, there were probably, I don't know, you know, it was like 5,000 kids.
Yeah,
there,
enormous,
I mean, there were 5,000-6,000 kids who showed up in South Orange, New Jersey on this Saturday night. And I mean, I don't know if there was any
violence.
It was a pretty friendly crowd. I mean, it wasn't menacing at all. It was actually sort of fun. It was like, you know, all these kids were like, you know, had, you know, all these kids just descended on South Orange, New Jersey. And so
sure
this is
to do what?
Exactly. I'm not sure what you do. You know, I mean, South Orange is perfectly pleasant.
Well, we had something like that. We had something. It was called Woodstock, wasn't it? I thought that was.
That was a little bit more organized. But this is just sort of like, you know, Bob Linden goes to his Facebook page and says, I want to, you know, let's all assemble, you know, and you know, and everybody who gets it, you know, sends it to everybody who's in their orbit, and then they do it for everybody in their orbit, and then all of a sudden you've got, you know, thousands of people show. Well, that's what this is. This is a sort of a virtual flash mob, and so everybody's going to show up on Saturday afternoon at 12 o'clock and say, go vegan, and provide them with howdoigovegan.com, which is sort of a one-stop resource for veganism and gives you all sorts of information, everything you really need, and even provides mentoring if you need some of that, and everything is free. And so, so we're going to be, you know, we're having this flash mob assemble at 12 o'clock on Saturday, but there won't be anybody doing, you know, assembling with their bodies. It's only going to be electronically, and it's going to be showing up and reaching out to 283,000 people. And my guess is, given that we've got 4 days left, and this is only, we got this in the first day. I mean, we did this yesterday. We set it up probably 3:30, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't remember. It was late afternoon yesterday. And we've got almost 300,000 people. So this is really interesting. It is fascinating in many ways, as much as the internet and computers have done bad things, like allowed for the invasion of our privacy in all sorts of horrible ways. It's made this sort of communication possible, which didn't exist, you know, before
computers. I hope it's not 283,000 NSA agents, though. You know what I mean? I hope it's like.
Bob, you know what? Let's turn him vegan, Bob.
Let's turn
him vegan.
I want take non-violent seriously.
Yeah, I want exactly. I want the whole world to be. I want the whole
non-violent.
Exactly. I want the whole world to be vegan. And so
whoever's listening.
Exactly. You know, and so I think, you know,
that's an amazing number, though. I think it is,
and we're the number one trending campaign, or, you know, on Thunderclap. If you go to the main page on Thunderclap, we are the at least we have been up to now. I'll tell you whether we are the number one trending campaign, and we have been since yesterday, you know, since early yesterday evening, we've been the number one trending campaign.
And that information is on the Facebook page, so people should just
go to Gary's Facebook page. If they go to the Facebook
page,
If they go to the Facebook page, which is Gary L. Francie, the abolitionist approach to animal rights, they can find the Thunderclap page that they can go to, and basically. All that's required is for them to give Thunderclap, and all they got to do is press a red, you know, press. There are three buttons: Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. And if they have accounts in all three, they can press all three red buttons. And all that does is give Thunderclap their permission to post one thing on one occasion in their timeline or their Twitter or Tumblr feeds. And this then gets out to all of their contacts, and it mushrooms. It is a flash mob. It's a virtual flash mob. Great idea. And so we're going to be getting out. My guess is we'll have at least another 100,000 by Saturday. So we'll be talking about at least 400,000 people. Maybe a 500,000 if we're lucky. Maybe a 500,000 people will be getting a vegan message. And so I'm excited about that. And I'm excited about the fact that we have 300 people who are spending basically New Year's Eve with us talking about effective advocacy, nonviolent, creative, nonviolent vegan advocacy in 2017. So, and Bob, by all means, join us. As a matter of fact, Anne and I actually were thinking that we'd like to do one of these webinars with you one time, because the webinar software is fairly, you can bring in other people. You know, it's not just the two of us in one spot. We could bring in other people. So in the future, we would like to do a webinar with you and talk with people about advocacy. But, you know, I mean, that's if you're not too terribly depressed about the fact that Obama did whatever the hell he did last week that's got you all upset. And I'm not defending Obama. I'm not defending Obama. Yes, I'm a Democrat, but I'm not defending Obama. You know, I think that what's going on in this country is really problematic. But I think in a lot of ways, you know, the reality, Bob, is that the Democrats lost the election
The Democrats lost because they're Republicans, basically.
So. Well, no, the Democrats lost because what they've done is they've abandoned social reform in favor of identity politics, and I think that that's really dangerous. I think it's unfortunate, and what's happened basically are the people who are suffering economically are desperate, and they are. I mean, I can't imagine what it's like to be one of these folks in these Midwestern towns that are based. I mean, look, you drive around, the East Coast, and you go to places like Allentown or there are a lot of places which, once had like a lot of industry, and now they're basically, they're basically shut down. And a lot of people, who once had good jobs that allowed them to, have a house and put their kids through school and stuff like that, they don't have those jobs anymore, and they're desperate. And I don't think the Democrats paid much attention to that. I think they were much more interested. And, Hillary was much more interested in sort of saying, well, if you're a woman, you ought to vote for me, or if you're a minority, you ought to vote for me. And never really understood the class dimensions.
I'm not Donald Trump. That was the other.
Right. Exactly. I'm not Donald Trump. OK, fine. You're not Donald Trump. What the hell do you stand for? And the answer is nobody knew. And so
I think warmongering, I think corruption, yeah. I think deception. I don't think you could believe it. For somebody who admits in public, so WikiLeaks revealed that, she has a public position on things and a private position, which basically means she lies in public. That's the way it is. And then she defends it on the debate by attributing it to something, related to Abe Lincoln, like Honest Abe. I lied because of Honest Abe, And her trip to Bosnia, right? I mean, if you just look on YouTube, Hillary Clinton, Bosnian sniper fire. And that's another one where it's like she's telling a story, and on CBS News, they're showing it's the exact opposite. So it's really hard to get behind somebody that deceptive, that dishonest. And I was concerned about the march to war with Russia. She wants a no-fly zone in Syria. I don't know what's wrong with these Democrats, but a no-fly zone will lead to a conflict with Russia, will lead to many civilian deaths. And I believe really that what we fear from Trump is already on Hillary's resume. I think her policies have been the most racist, sexist, anti-human, anti-everything good thing in the world, basically.
Yeah, but apart from that, what's wrong with her? But apart from that,
I don't think people, to see people like Michael Moore, it's like the Democrats, just the left, just became like the new right, and suddenly the war in Iraq is okay, and corruption is okay, the Clinton Foundation taking millions of dollars from Saudi Arabia. I just think people should have really... it's also superficial, so nobody really looks into, her involvement with mass incarceration, what happened in Haiti. I mean, the list is so long that I resent the Democrat Party for giving me someone like that's an immoral vote. I could not vote for Hillary. That would be immoral to me. So I couldn't quite vote for Trump either. If I voted for Trump, it would have been a vote against Hillary. But I did vote for Jill Stein, and I don't know what comes next. I mean, the Democrats, they're still being like the Amy Chuck Schumer party. There's not much. I don't know where the hope is in the future. I'd like to see, hey, where's Dennis Kucinich? Let's have the vegans, Kucinich and Cindy Sheehan.
Dennis Kucinich made it very clear. As a matter of fact, I saw a statement that was attributed to him that that if he became president, there would be, he wasn't going to have a vegan White House, Bob.
He was personally
vegan, and that was all. In many ways, a Dennis Kucinich presidency promoting happy exploitation in many ways is not a hell of a lot better. So, I mean, the reality is the political situation in this country is broken in lots and lots of ways. With the most important way being, I think, in many ways, that we have, the government is largely influenced to the point of being controlled by large corporate interests. That's the problem. And until that changes, nothing will change. It's like I always say, until you stop eating them, nothing changes. Once you stop eating them for moral reasons, everything changes. And it's the same thing with our political system. As long as money buys influence, nothing will change. Once you stop that, everything will change. And so, you know, that's the key. And I think unfortunately, we're not going to, you know, Donald Trump has promised an end to that, but I'm rather doubtful that's going to happen.
If Donald Trump keeps us out of war with Russia and then there's no TPP, all right, well, count your blessings, however small they might be, you know, I don't know.
I guess we could all tolerate if Sylvester Stallone is the head of the National Endowment for the Humanities. I mean, we'll be able to put up with that sort of stuff. But I agree. I mean, you know, Hillary Clinton was by no means a perfect candidate. She was in fact, she was exactly the wrong candidate for this election. She was the wrong person to run. And what I don't understand is why the Democrats weren't smart enough to figure that out. Why they could not get into their heads that she was the wrong person to run in 2016. But in any event, but on a positive note,
I do say that. No, don't get positive again yet. So, yeah. I seriously believe that there was enough fraud during the primaries to where I do believe Bernie won, and we'd be looking at a president-elect Bernie right now. And again, he's not the perfect one, but you know
that would look that would have been great. And I was supporting Bernie, and I was being called a sexist because by animal people who were saying that because I wouldn't support Hillary Clinton, I was a sexist. And I also was being called a speciesist by people who said, well, you're supporting Bernie and he's not a vegan. And you should be supporting the Humane Party, which is to call it a joke is an insult to jokes. But they had a vice presidential candidate who rejects veganism as a moral baseline. I mean, it was stupid beyond belief, actually. But I mean, but you had animal people who were saying, well, you're speciesist if you support Bernie Sanders. And just, you know, oh, come on. Will you people please get real? And so, I mean, I think the one thing I think is true is that vegan advocacy for the next several years is going to be really challenging because
there was a Bernie rally that actually just sprang up in my neighborhood, believe it or not, here right where I take Daisy walking one day in this big park. There's a Bernie rally. And the line went on for miles. It was, you know, just so incredible that you had to feel that he was going to win. I mean, there was no end to the line. Well, I took my megaphone out there. Nobody bothered me. These are the people, Bernie's people are the people, you know, get them all together because they're open to veganism. That's the whole thing. You know, if they're interested in climate change, animals, human health, everything. Bernie's agenda, the progressive agenda is accomplished by all of us going vegan, basically. So it was a very...
But unfortunately, Bob, unfortunately, progressives have not gotten behind that position. And, you know, I mean, they talk about sustainability and they talk about the environment and they talk about all those sorts of values. But, the progressive movement has really not seen the wisdom of veganism for sure. And so, you know, I agree with you. I agree with you that, you know, that they may be more open to it. But the reality is, and I agree with you, I think that Bernie got screwed in the primaries. There's no doubt about it. And I think that, you know, the Democratic, you know, National Committee, Debbie Wasserman Schultz and her friends decided that he was not, you know, that it was Hillary's turn. She was going to win. He wasn't. And they engineered it. I agree with you. But on a positive note, I just want to say if people want to feel good about themselves and about 2017 and getting out and doing things and exercising their First Amendment rights, then on Friday night, we're going to have this webinar and we'll have all sorts of fun. And I hope it's going to really be a good and very educational. Anna and I have a lot of material that we're working on that we're going to present. And then on Saturday, please, please, please go to Gary L. Francione, The Abolitionist Approach to Animal Rights, and go to our Thunderclap page. Or go to Thunderclap. You can go right to the Thunderclap page because we happen to be, I don't know if I mentioned this, Bob, but we are the number one trending campaign. We're right at the top of their page and have been since yesterday. And they can go to that page and they can sign up with their Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr accounts. And they can be part of this creative, nonviolent vegan advocacy that's going to happen on Saturday. That's going to be equivalent to a virtual flash mob. Okay? So be
it
positive.
It sounds great.
Be okay. Positive. That's, be positive.
Okay.
All right.
Well, we'll close on a positive note with you here today. It's very unusual to have. I think, I don't know if the audience is still staying with me. We've been so positive so much. I don't know that the audience is used to such positivity. But actually, So we'll end on that positive note. I'm going to do another segment. To try to bring things back to normal here after.
You can do a segment. You can do a dark segment. Yeah, and sort of bring it back.
I'm going to do it. My next segment. I'm going to try to figure out how I get Thunderclap to have people donate to Go Vegan Radio. I know that I'm trying to coerce people with jars of Veganaise. So I'll talk about that after the break and. We'll see if we can bring things back to fear and loathing.
Okay.
Just what we would normally expect from the media, right? So
Exactly. Okay. Happy New Year, and we'll see you next. Happy New Year, and we'll see you next week.
Happy New Year. We will talk again next week, and more fake news coming up on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio. Almost sounds like a New Year's celebration in the background. Huh? And New Year's coming up. Not all wines are vegan. Not all wines are organic. We do have a link at GoVeganRadio.com. So that if your next celebration includes wine or sparkling wine, you can order vegan organic wine from the Organic Wine Company. And there is a link at GoVeganRadio.com. And so I can't let you get away without a year-end appeal for donations. We're coming up on Sweet 16 in January, 16 years broadcasting. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, as heard on the Air America Radio Network and CBS and Clear Channel stations around the country, and iTunes and XM Sirius. So here we are, vegan education, vegan activism, and you can support us with a tax-deductible donation by clicking Donate at GoVeganRadio.com. We would certainly appreciate that. And if you are kind enough to donate $50 now through New Year's, we will send you a coupon for a jar of Veganaise. So that'll be our thank you to you for the first 40 people who donate $50 at GoVeganRadio.com. We will send you a jar of Veganaise. And also, if you support our program, we want to get Radio Bobby going, a music radio station that I think will be your music experience of a lifetime. That was my past life before vegan activism and animal advocacy. I was a program director at radio stations around the country, and I think I could bring some happiness to the world, maybe happiness to you, with the music that we'll have. And also the intention is that, great, awesome, amazing song after song after song. And then if commercial announcements come on, you will not be subjected to any associated with meat, dairy, fish, eggs, anything from, any products derived from animals at all. So please donate at GoVeganRadio.com. We certainly need your help. We thank our sponsors for support: Evolution, dog and cat food; Evolution, Daisy loves Evolution. You can go to petfoodshop.com, check it out. And also, we appreciate Health Aid Kombucha, which is just, you know, if you know, you want to have a really a great toast on New Year's, you want a non-alcoholic beverage, I'm telling you that Health Aid Kombucha is really delicious. So many wonderful flavors, and it is organic, vegan, raw, kosher, all the good things, cold-pressed. It's excellent. And if you're planning on a getaway, want to get away from it all, there is one vegan eco-resort in all of America, and that is the Stanford Inn on the Mendocino Coast in Northern California. The Stanford Inn, you go to stanfordinn.com. It has a famous restaurant there, the Ravens Restaurant. And Jeff and Joan Stanford have a book called Dining at the Ravens with recipes from the restaurant. But check it out. Check out the rooms. And it's just in a magical place on the Mendocino Coast. You can kayak, bike ride, wonderful programs there, yoga, art, just go have a great time. Companion animals are welcome. And so please consider Go Vegan Radio. No, don't consider, just consider, but actually please make a donation to Go Vegan Radio. Again, this is grassroots activism, and we promise never to, you know, we'll never support cage-free eggs or lab meat or, you know, whatever, grass-fed, pasture-raised, you know, whatever. We don't support Meatless Mondays. Meatless Mondays, what a great, you know, it's a bonanza for the dairy and egg industry. Meatless Mondays, where, you know, people don't eat meat, they just eat more dairy and eggs. The egg industry thanks Meatless Mondays for its highest sales in 30 years. And then, you know, then on Tuesday, I'm sure everybody just, you know, doubles up on the meat because they, he or she feels that he or she made a sacrifice the prior day, right? So what kind of nonsense when we need vegan 7 days a week? We need, we want to do a program, Vegan 2020, so that we can see climate change clearly and get the word out. You know, I mean, we are the only program that talks about climate change every single week, and we talk about the one and only solution. So is that not worth a donation? No, I shouldn't put it in the negative. That's worth a donation, right? That's worth a donation to Go Vegan Radio, the only avenue of truth. Of course, we will be called fake news by the Department of Anti-Propaganda Department, the legislation just signed by Obama. That's the truth when it comes to climate change. You won't get the truth from politicians, Democrat or Republican. It really doesn't matter, you know, if you deny climate change or you accept that it's happening. If you don't embrace the solution, what's the point, right? And the only solution is a massive 50 to 85% population shift away from those who, you know, those who consume so-called livestock products have to go vegan by 2020, or we reach the tipping points, or else, you know, too late. And it's too late. Then we'll go the way of, you know, so many famous people in 2016. You know, so many people. It's really an amazing, you know, as the year ends and we look at how many people passed on in the year. Look, George Michael, just a few days ago. So many people from the music world. You know, I talk about Radio Bobby and you know, people whose music I actually played on air over my career. And, you know, I see George Michael dying. I think of Kissing a Fool. I think of Wham and, you know, Careless Whisper. And then Leon Russell died this year. And I've always played Rainbow in Your Eyes and A Song for You, Stranger in a Strange Land. Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, both Keith Emerson and Greg Lake passed away this year. Remember their classic songs, From the Beginning and Lucky Man. Of course, David Bowie died of cancer at age 69. I look at so many of the, you know, deaths of the celebrities and well-known. Not too many people making it into the 90s. Not that many really making it into the 80s. A lot of death in the 60s, you know, we talk about how consumption of meat, dairy, fish, and eggs really causes premature death. Glenn Frey of the Eagles died this year. How many great songs from the Eagles. We'll be on Radio Bobby, huh? After the Thrill is Gone, Old 55, Is It True? So many. Also, Paul Kantner died this year. He was co-founder of the Jefferson Airplane. Some of my favorite songs of theirs are Today and Coming Back to You and Wooden Ships and just, you know, just amazing classics from the Jefferson Airplane. Prince died this year at age 57. Very young. People who go in the 50s, huh? Of course, When Doves Cry, Little Red Corvette, 1999, Let's Go Crazy. Maurice White died of Earth, Wind, and Fire. Do you remember? September, but You're Still a Young Man. Leonard Cohen, the writer of Suzanne, that classic song sung by Judy Collins. And Gary Shandling died this year of a heart attack at age 66. Remember, on this program, you can check out the archives with Caldwell Esselstyn, M.D., of the Cleveland Clinic, who says, nobody has to have heart disease. Nobody has to have heart disease. Yet everybody has to. Everybody seems to have heart disease, right? Because everybody seems to eat meat, dairy, fish, and eggs, right? Gene Wilder died this year. He made it to the 80s, but he was 82. And the greatest, Muhammad Ali, died this year, and he was only 74. He was the greatest because he said so. No, not because he said so, because he stood up to the war machine, and that really made him a hero. Muhammad Ali, a great anti-war hero, really. It's amazing. Nancy Reagan died this year. Nancy Reagan. Also, when you see the people who died, you go, wow, I didn't realize they were still alive. You know, Nancy Reagan was 94. Abe Vigoda died. Let's see. Like even Shimon Peres of Israel, 93. Fidel Castro died this year. Astronaut and Senator John Glenn, 95. Well, this is a like an A-list celebrity list. I'm certainly glad not to see my name on it. Attorney General Janet Reno died. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Arnold Palmer died this year. He was 87, the golf legend. Joe Garagiola, the baseball announcer, good friends with Yogi Berra, baseball player. Pat Summitt, the winningest coach in college basketball, passed away in 2016. Gordie Howe, Mr. Hockey, 23-time All-Star in the NHL. Gordie Howe died at 88. This is the first time I've ever mentioned hockey. No, maybe I did. There's a hockey player. What is his name? Is it George Laroque? Comes to me. I think I mentioned him in the past. I don't mention hockey that often, but, you know, I have a family member who loves hockey. So here, Gordie Howe, okay, I mentioned Florence Henderson died of the Brady Bunch, and Alan Thicke at age 69, Patty Duke at age 69. I grew up watching the Patty Duke show. Frank Sinatra Jr. died. Zsa Zsa Gabor was still alive. Whoa, well, I think she gets the record for 2016. She was 99. Zsa Zsa Gabor. I was a little child when I was first seeing Zsa Zsa Gabor on TV. And Tom Hayden died, the 60s so-called radical California politician. He was 76. So the radical Tom Hayden died. The conservative Phyllis Schlafly died. John McLaughlin of the McLaughlin Group. Well, Boutros Ghali, UN Secretary General, actor George Kennedy. Remember him from Cool Hand Luke and The Naked Gun and Airport. Morley Safer of CBS Fake News. Gary Marshall, creator of Happy Days. and The Odd Couple, and Robert Vaughn, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. I grew up on that series also. He died this year, Doris Roberts, Everybody Loves Raymond. So quite the list there. And that's 2016, all passing on this year and leaving it to us. So here we go. So I want to wish you a happy new year after that morbidity. Huh? How can we turn that frown upside down and actually be positive, huh? Well, we can say, you know, why not add years to your life? Why not, you know, I mean, if we're told by Caldwell Esselstyn that, Carrie Fisher, dead at 60. Princess Leia this year, she died. Carrie Fisher, who was married to Paul Simon for a while, right? So, quite a year for celebrity death. And as I was saying, if you have somebody like a renowned medical doctor like Caldwell Esselstyn of the Cleveland Clinic saying nobody has to have heart disease, and then if you archive T. Colin Campbell on a past Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, he said, oh, now I always forget the number. You think I would be able to quote my own radio program accurately? But let's go with the lesser number. I'm going to say that he said at least 80% of all fatal degenerative disease is caused by animal protein and not much of it. I'm going to say he said 80%. I believe he may have said 90%, but I'll go with the 80% here. Someday we'll research it by going to my own archive, but I don't listen to myself, so I think that's the problem. So anyway, so if you have that, if you have meat, dairy, fish, and egg consumption, and heart disease, cancer, okay, so you want the family to live longer, happier lives, let us all go vegan. Okay. So I want to thank you again for listening. And again, please make your year-end donation. We would really appreciate your contribution. Anything over $50 for the next 40 people donating, we'll send you a coupon for a jar of Veganaise. And we appreciate your support and listening. And thank you and Happy New Year.